just fine.
Trying to keep that little seat because I don't want them there, but then.
We are.
Set to go.
Very good. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I want to welcome you to this Los Angeles County Board of County Commissioners meeting, acting in the capacity as the Board of Human Services. Today is Tuesday, May 21st, 2024, and it is now 1 p.m. I'm calling the meeting to order. Please rise by an invocation for Commissioner Tony Haas.
Dear Lord, we ask that you forgive our failings of yesterday and the past week, and we ask for your guidance and mercy this week. Teach us to walk with you and trust in you. All in your glory, Lord. Amen.
And pledge of allegiance, Mr. Aragon.
Pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Before we do roll call, Commissioner Luis Lopez sends a huge apology, brother. He belongs to a statewide board, and they're making a big decision upon the recommendation of Governor Polis. And so from that perspective, I know he's here someplace, he probably hears my comments, but he won't be participating in the meeting today. So roll call, Mr. Aragon.
Mr. Haas.
Here.
Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Here. Approval of the agenda. Do we have any changes to the agenda, Mr. Aragon?
Not at this time, Commissioner.
Okay. Hearing that, I'll entertain a motion to approve that agenda.
Move to approve the agenda.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Kubitz-Lopez?
Yes. We're going to go to section 2, minutes of April 16, 2024. Commissioner Haas, we have had those minutes. Do you have any questions, comments, or conversation? And having no comments, I will move to approve the minute meetings from April 16, 2024.
Move to approve the April 16, 2024 regular meeting minutes.
Second that motion.
Commissioner Haas?
Yes.
Commissioner Kubitz-Lopez?
Yes. And I'm surprised we don't have a director's report stated with that, but it is your floor, your platform, Mr. Aragon. Your report, sir.
Commissioner, just a few updates. To brief the board, last month when we had a discussion regarding the child welfare allocation committee and a vote that was proposed on the allocation funding model. That vote was taken in that meeting. Commissioner Felix Lopez was a part of that. I thank you again, sir, for your advocacy for not just us, but the entire Department of Human Services throughout 64 counties. That vote did, in fact, pass with the funding model for the next year as the allocation model as well. So we will see what that leads us in 2026 as we enter into that new fiscal year. So we do anticipate to see an increase in the funding for 2025, fiscal year 24-25. But again, with that funding model being based on the spending of the departments, we do anticipate to see that there may or may not be an increase that or decrease depending on the type of spending that the departments moving forward. They are focused on having a more robust conversation over the next year regarding a more permanent solution to the funding model, which we're grateful for. As we know that that is an important piece for all of the counties to be at that table, especially the balance of state counties outside of the Big 11. So I will continue to monitor that and work with the Commissioner Felix Lopez on updates and additional information and moving forward in the conversation over what that funding model will look like.
Do you know what is going to be on the agenda for next week? I quite honestly have been so crazy busy. I know we're going to have a meeting Tuesday.
Correct.
Next week, okay.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, no, I have not seen an agenda from the state as of today. So I'm anticipating we'll see that drop, but if there's anything specific, we're putting it up, make sure to know and invite.
Thank you, Sergeant.
Okay. Okay. A couple of other more internal pieces that I wanted to discuss with the board. The department has been working over the last year to really button down security within the department building and ensuring the safety of not only the clients that we serve, but also the staff that we work with every day. A couple of measures that were taken was over the last 4 years, we obviously worked on identifying areas of the department that were concerning or were accessible to public that we were not aware of prior. That being our back door to the departments, because the coded system on the back was not a secure system. So in fact, former employees and or public would have been able to access that building with a very generic code. So we have made sure that that system is locked down. To also ease access to departments or divisions, we worked on internal locks for each of the floors to ensure that there's a badge system that allows staff only into those areas. We've also installed windows on each of the division floors where guests can be greeted. So once they go through security screening at the front, they're able to access the floors as needed without having concern that somebody is a threat to the department. We've also installed a metal detector at the front door, and that was installed several months back. And our new security guard, who screens quite thoroughly, has done an amazing job of just in securing the building and making sure that there's no issues. So we've taken all those measures. We've also provided some, unfortunately, more bulletproof areas within the lobby, just because of the role that we live in at this point. And so it's a realistic aspect of what we do every day. We don't know who could walk through the door. And so we have to take every measure to mitigate any kind of risk or concern in that area. So we've, thanks to the maintenance department here in the county, along with our needs, over the last year, they built a more secure bulletproof area for the lobby reception area as well as security. And we revamped all of that security measure as well. We've added additional cameras, which now report throughout the department building and external. Because we do offer visitations out in park area as well. And so if there's a concern of security risk, we can monitor that as well. Both of the front and back door were also outfitted with an emergency lockdown system that both the lobby receptionist and the security officers have. So if there's somebody that's a potential threat from the outside that they didn't identify prior, there's a system that they press and it will lock down the entire building. So those security measures have been put in place. We've been working with the Sheriff's Office and Deputy Williams, Ben Romero, who have gone through that with us. We've also identified an active shooter plan. We'll begin fire drills within the department building sometime in July. And we ensure that we have an mapping on each floor for exit in the emergency of the fire. So
let me not interrupt you, but make a comment. I think when you do that, that's also going to be very favorable when it comes to the insurance CTSI. So when you do those, catalog what happened and how you came up with the recommendations that perhaps are going to be made by fire or law enforcement. I mean, those are, congrats on all of those injuries.
So CTSI has been a part of that planning process already, as well as HX, our HR service. They provided us with a emergency manual that has been built for the department. I will be glad to provide the board with a copy if they wish. It's about 850 pages worth of materials. Or I can just give you a summation at some point if you have questions.
We like that. It's certainly, you know, not that we don't want it, but at the end of the day, as long as the those measures are being put in place for the safety of the public and the employees, I think suffices.
Yeah, so in July, before we start our fire drills, all our leadership team will be going through a training. They will have a manual on their desk that provides them with guidance in an emergency situation. We've also identified call-out codes through our paging system on the main phone line so that if there is an active shooter, if there is a concern about the lockdown, we can provide that to staff for security measures. So I think we've made strides in securing the building and making folks that visit us feel safe while they're there. And so that's one of the big projects we've been working on over the last few years. And so I think we're finally at the point where I can report to the board, I feel comfortable that we've taken every measure possible to mitigate the risk within the department of the building.
And I would probably be correct in saying that in the event that there would be an incident taking place on your building, probably would be impacting this building as well.
Correct. Yeah.
So,
and I think I have your 850 page report on a thumb drive. I'm on the executive board for CTSI.
that we sent. Yeah, so Paycheck did, they have a team of about 9 separate experts in different areas of safety risk mitigation. We came together and worked with myself and provided information based on what CTSI and liability insurance looks like. And so we've tried to mitigate as much as possible. So all staff will go through some form of emergency training, but our leadership and our level on how to respond will be going into that sometime in early July to mid-July.
How many DHS statewide are paying attention to exactly what you're doing that?
So the state, after we started all the security measures, I don't know if it was prompted by us. I had several conversations with folks at HICPA about the lobbying and serving the public. With the border calls, we simply had a desk from reception there. And it, you know, unfortunately, coming from 23 years of being in education, being in school settings, we know what kind of world we live in. It's an unfortunate piece, but I have to think about the staff that we have in the building every day as well, and then the volume of folks from out of town that are not just moving in. We're seeing folks coming down to apply for benefits with us because it's easier access. We're not aware, we can't ask for that information. So, you know, we don't know what we could expect. But HICPA did, in fact, last year, then release a small grant project for safety and security within just the lobby areas. But as far as to the structures of the buildings themselves and the risk mitigation, I don't know if a lot of counties really give that a lot of thought. There are some that I've seen in small rural areas that are in lockdown, which is great, but there's no safety protocols or plans in place. So, but you know, it's more than just putting the physical structure in. It's also having an operational plan that if something were to happen, an emergency in some situation occur, how do you respond to that appropriately? So that's the other piece of the puzzle. Lockdown buildings all day, but we don't have an emergency response platform, we still put everybody at risk.
With all the goodness of the services that you all provide, thank you for all that you do on a daily basis. There is always going to be an opportunity for the county to be the bad guy. You took my child away, you did this to me, and they'll take it personal. So those measures not only should be applauded, but I think every county should go through the process. I think one of the reports that you gave us a while back, you had on the average of about, I made a note for myself here, 8,600 applications that you have processed through DHS. Of those, perhaps might be a little bit more than that, but not every one of them comes in the building on a daily basis, but at any point in time that they need your services, they're gonna come face to face. So I think it's for their safety and the safety of our employees. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. Outside of that, the only other piece that I wanted to report on for this month, to keep it brief, is that I will be attending the CCI conference next week, myself and Ms. Tucker from UIFS, as there tends to be very heavy child welfare related conversations that are important in that matter. We will be attending next week. Post that attendance, I will be taking a small vacation, so I will be out of the office starting next Thursday afternoon after the conference. And I'll return to the office on Wednesday, the 5th of June. So, in the interim, both the Deputy Director Bertolino on the program side and Deputy Director Randy back to the answering your issues of the department.
We're going to have a lot of questions on those 2 days. Thank you, sir.
He's still honeymooning, Commissioner.
You know what? Honeymoon is 3 days. Or did I say 3 months? Thank you once again, and welcome to all of you. If Commissioner has any questions for the Director Aragon,
no.
Let's go to section 4, new business. 4A, consideration of caseload and counts by activity and program.
So, Commissioners, in lieu of presentation today, since we have two very important designations to identify, I would ask the board if there are questions regarding the case counts. I would like to point out that there were two additions to this case count starting this month. You'll see in under adult banking services, we now offer the IDD service case count, which is Ms. Marcy Mason, who's our new supervisor. that transitioned over into the CMA transition. So those case counts are available for you there. And then additional to that, Ms. Charlotte, our therapeutic and mental health provider, has provided her case counts. So you'll see those numbers in there so that you can identify the number of folks we're serving in each of those different areas at this point. And Charlotte's got a full year at her dot now. And then some, so we're seeing traction with mental health services, and we are looking to expand that to another provider within 25-26 time frame.
You know, and thank you for sharing the case count, and invite her to come with us, come with you next month, and just provide us kind of a 30,000 foot level of services that she's providing to.
Certainly, one of the other things, Commissioner, since we discussed at last month's or the prior month's meeting, was the contract with their renewals. I wanted to update the board on that quickly as well. With that system now in place, we do know that when we have clients that we're working directly with in child welfare or adult services, Charlotte's more than capable of managing that under the current funding stream that we provide to fund her position and therapeutic services, whether that's under four, whether it's child welfare, Medicaid, or in Lori's department, you know, maybe a Medicaid case, or maybe something that we do internal to provide those services. In addition to that, what we found is a gap in mental health services post transition of those cases where we closed them out, families are still in need of mental health services. So what we've been able to do now is extend the opportunity to families that we work with, as well as in the future, rolling out into the general public and providing mental health services within the department to all. That system now allows us to build private entrances as well as Medicaid. So we can add additional sessions as needed to the families that would serve, or we can also look at onboarding external clients that are not part of the human service world, but that we open that door for mental health services within the county. So that being said, an additional therapist within the next 1 to 2 years would be a necessity.
Now, will this professional be able to work with your staff too? Because this is a stressful position there.
Yeah, Charlotte's been amazing already. So we've had some really trying cases, both in BPS and CPS in the last couple of months. Charlotte's been a wonderful outreach for them. Also keep in mind that we do have the employee assistance program through Paycheck. So if they're not able to access Charlotte or they choose not to, they have an alternative option to mental health services as well through the EAP and our Paychecks and Flex. They have two avenues for the staff to gain access to those services, even for vicarious or post-secondary trauma.
Well, and applaud to the continuity of services, because in higher ed, historically, we provided a number of appointments, and that was only, in a sense, discovering the facts and the challenges of our students. But then we got to refer to other agencies, which at the end of the day, some of them didn't follow up and they were not able to get in. So for this particular continuity of services, now having the ability to build private insurance, that is huge.
Yeah, it really opens the door not only for us as an agency to make that division self-sufficient in its revenue streams through time, but ultimately we secured Charlotte under our current funding model. So as we ease into this in that business model, it allows us flexibility to look at how we're going to manage that. And so I have to give Ms. Tupper's team kudos, because Madison, who's our lead, is serving as an interim kind of bridge between our clients right now and working within that system to schedule those folks with Charlotte through that system. And then we're able to bill on the backside. So as those clients kind of move out of the child welfare realm and they need those continuing services, you're right. The first few sessions is really just building that rapport. Speaking of Ms. Madison, it allows us to continue that mental health and identify and try to address, you know, that trauma for the clients. And then again, in the realm of adult services, we have a lot of family who struggle with day-to-day caretaking of their, you know, their at-risk adult or an at-risk adult or an elderly parent. And that's a stressful job too. And so we're hoping that we can open those services as well as we increase our therapeutic division over the next few years.
One of the conversations we've had with BHA as they're getting ready to do all the hospitals is And I've asked from day one to access and call VHSs throughout the entire state, because one of the very forgotten populations that we have out there is our farming and ranching communities. We have these suicide tendencies with all of the impact that is happening and all the pressures that our ag community is going through. The last request we had, I attend those meetings pretty regularly with the VHA, is ask them to partner with VHS, reach out to VHS. In Los Angeles County specifically, I'm going to be calling for my county and place a provider within, managed by the department, to serve all of the communities. Because, you know, and I'm going to, I know Commissioner Tony has us going to do this, but recently he did a documentary. And when you watch a documentary, you will see it is not only, it will bring the humanity amongst anyone, because it's so powerful of what is happening with our farming and ranching community. And they are a community that they're not going to go out and say, hey, by the way, Tony, would you please help me out? I need to talk to you. They're not. They're basically just letting it ride and hoping that these symptoms are going to go away. Commissioner has in that video, and pardon me, Commissioner, but I do believe that you need to, we need to highlight this, because the VHA and TRIO now continue to be a strong voice for rural Colorado. They need to provide services, not just in the Metroplex, but make them available for all parts of rural and frontier counties. So from that perspective, and this particular video, he happened to send it out one evening, and I'm telling you, it really moves you in there, because each and every one of us has probably heard and listened well. He has had the phone calls. And it's incredible, as so many groups, we talk about doing aid, but now it is time to deliver on the appropriation that took place with VHA and continue to keep their feet to the fire so they can deliver the services for our counties and my county. That is, of course, as we go throughout the state, I'm always going to be asking for this in this county, but I hope that we're able to get the appropriation, the FPE, to be placed under the supervision that you have to continue to provide those, I mean, those paramount services.
Yeah, it's not an uncommon practice. I know that Ms. Tupper came from an agency in rural Colorado that I have a therapist on staff. For many years, we've had them on staff. I don't know if they actually did anything external as far as bill to, you know, provide services to clients outside of the department, but ultimately, you know, it's a gap here. And part of the gap is that when we place them with one of our core providers, although they do really well with a core provider, once we close that case, they're no longer eligible for those services. There's a bridge that breaks in between, and whether that client is going to continue meeting with that same therapist, and can they afford that? Are they capable of doing that? Or is it, you know, they just walk away and all their services are already rendered, even though they've tried to bridge that gap. And so we're hoping that because they're already comfortable with this provider at VHS and post to pull out of the case, that they'll continue with that plan. And we're not bound by, you know, because Medicaid has a very strict six-session platform. Once you hit those six sessions, you're done. And that's kind of what prompted this realization that when we get to a point where our client is just barely starting to tap into some of that trauma with a provider, they're out the door. There's no way to extend those. And so it's up to the agency whether to allow the sessions to continue at either a reduced cost or pro bono. But at the end of the day, really a lot of clients are just turned away after six sessions. And so my perspective is that we find that continuity of care and mental health around. I also feel it's important right now to build something strong and whole, because with, as you know, we have a realignment of the case management agencies for the CCB and for single entry point, but now RAISE are under a transition. So they are back out to bid. They have narrowed it from 9 regions to 4 regions, which really increases area coverage for Ray to provide oversight to those mental health providers as well as all other medical providers. It's a little concerning because that's a very large area that we're going to be bumped into, and I don't know what kind of services we're going to receive from the Ray and support of mental health within Colorado. And that being said, we have to make sure that we have internal that's strong enough to support the needs of the department as well as the clients we serve. So hence the need for having therapists on board. Our next move is to find somebody with significant background and training in specific areas such as substance abuse and or domestic violence and or both. Because those are areas of concern that we need to address within our community. Substance abuse specifically, the opioid epidemic.
Let me wet the ground by saying that the opioid, we're getting ready to go about the second year of appropriations. I'm going to lobby for myself to see if I can become the chair of the region beginning in 2025. And right now I serve as the vice chair. There's going to be a vacancy. There is a pretty good possibility that with the help of my fellow commissioners, we might be able to have that. Not to say that we are going to do A or B, but let's consider applying for some funds to provide through the opioid dollars. So let's look at that. And certainly I would love to get you and whomever from your agency scheduled to do a presentation with the opioid. There's nine counties. And at the end of the day, that's one of the reasons why we keep pushing for local control. We know what services are needed, how to cover those gaps. So keep that in mind. And as we go through the process, whatever position a county commissioner from the San Luis County occupies there, let's think about writing a grant and asking for those very services to have whatever services you think we need. So I'll send you via the website so you can take a look and see how and some of the other current awards that we have made, and you'll see the entire application from an entity. And one of the things that we did, we had a meeting with them last week, and one thing that I'm calling for is now I want to see the numbers. I want to see what number of clients you have had from the San Luis County, because the money that we were allocated, we basically gave to the block. Because we can acquire more services, we can expand the services more. So in the next month or so, we're going to have access to data. So we can take a look at the dashboard and see, okay, we have so many people here that are on this phase of the treatment and all the way up to detox and total, what we can call total rehab. So keep that in mind.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, Commissioner. And you know, the granting opportunities that have come out of, you know, review those. I think we'll be at a point where I will feel comfortable moving forward with that. Keep in mind, although we are providing these therapeutic services internally, we will continue to work with our full providers that we've had in the past, such as Signal and Health Solutions, because there are specialized areas that we will never be able to touch. And so those folks are county partners, community partners that we will still lean against their agency for those specific services. We're not looking to cut anyone in the name. We're just looking to expand the services within the community and the mental health realm, because it's such a vital piece. You know, I can even see a joint venture on granting opportunities for opioid between us and Signal, or us and Health Solutions, or us and some of our private mental health providers, because there's an opportunity to just build a strong enough mental health network within Los Angeles County and in this region, because it's so necessary within these areas. And because we have such a large county geographically, it also means that we have more opportunity to locate other areas of the county that we can extend those services to in time. You know, having a therapist that maybe well once a month can provide services in a location out there for a day, specific clients or whatever that looks like.
And I hope that when you guys are approaching this idea, that the scope isn't so narrow that it doesn't include substance abuse as a whole, because we're talking about local control. I know my district and Kim is in my district. They don't want to use opioids as much as it is alcohol.
Yeah.
And alcohol and substance abuse and mental health are like this. And that's, I can share that video with you if you want.
I would appreciate it. It would be great to watch.
That was through CDA and CFB. So they're working on it from there.
Yeah, you know, when we talk substance abuse, those are all the same substances that we encounter. You know, illegal street drugs, opioids, alcoholism. Those are all substance abuse issues that we face within the communities in this area. It's not just within Trinidad, it's throughout the entire county, throughout the region, honestly. And so it's a battle that my team face every day. Yeah, so those services are not in any shape scope to just one area.
Well, I'm talking about the grant process.
Yeah.
And if you're going after that little arrow in your verbiage to just talk about opioid abuse.
Yeah, no.
Yeah, it's got to be this.
There's a broad spectrum of substances that we've seen throughout the years. And I will say that in the 4 years I've been here, I think the majority of the newborn cases we've seen have always been tied to substance abuse issues, whether that's alcohol or opioids or street drugs or all three, sometimes two, you know, we see that. But we also have seen an increase in substance use that's impacted TV within the home. We've seen substance use that's impacted sexual assault on children in the home. So those are types of situations that these staff are facing daily. And so, yeah, when we're talking about that team, we're looking at incorporating all of those different pieces.
A lot of the opportunities, we also brought a mini grant. It's very small, and perhaps you and I need to sit down and talk about that, because we're getting ready to do the second phase of the opioid to do education. Education is so important. Right now, one of the conversations that we are getting involved in with the opioid group, and that's statewide. We're going to be going to a conference, and one of the things that we're identifying someone that could actually present what is the impact if there was an OD on mushrooms, because they're legal here in Colorado. What could happen when you have mushrooms in marijuana with the potency that it really has? And now you mix it up and lace it with something else. So we have a real challenge. And for us to stay ahead of the whole thing, I think education as well is as imperative. And you have of all the clients that we serve within the San Luis County, creating a little bit of an infomercial, almost making it mandatory to have access to that information, because boy, I'm so worried with the fentanyl that we have on the streets. It is just incredibly challenging, and more so for this particular agency to stay ahead of the game.
Well, and we're having a huge problem with teenage substance users right now. It's the only inpatient programs are in Denver, and they only keep them inpatient for a very short period of time, and then it's a day treatment program. And kids down here can't access that, you know, unless we had them with a relative who happened to live in Denver to get them the day program all the time. But yeah, we have a huge, like, heavy drug using teenagers. It's pretty incredible.
Well, I think the other discussion or the people that need to be at the table, and you know, Jamie and I are working with the judicial system, but sitting at the table with probation, sitting at the table with the district court judges, and having those conversations about what is that side of the house like as well, because oftentimes, especially when we're talking about teenagers with severe substance abuse who have picked up cards, it's really difficult to hold those kids to any kind of accountability and or judicial mandates. And so we struggle with those. We see kiddos who racked up charges, but yet there's not a whole lot that we can do because of limited resources available to even the judicial side of the house.
Yeah, unless they burn something down or hurt somebody seriously, they're not a lot of fun.
And that's the problem. So where do we get in front of it to stop from getting to that point? And it's at that point, unfortunately. So that is why, as a department, you know, even before Jamie was on, I really felt it important that we begin to expand our mental health services with our own agency, because a lot of our providers, again, we work with them, we love them, they're amazing, but they also have to survive. They have to meet with their private clients, and us getting clients in for 20 minutes or 30 minutes once a month while they're in their case with us is not sufficient mental health services. And so having Charla in this position allows us to provide that access depending on the needs. She's meeting with some clients 4 days a week. She's meeting with some clients once a week. She's meeting with some clients once every 2 weeks, depending on where they're at. So that level of intervention being focused on just those clients is part of also why the division of family services, we're not seeing the high numbers of alcohol replacements like we did in the past. We're not seeing the level of interventions that were taking place in the past, which also reduces cost. I mean, it's also money. It begins to lessen the amount of alcohol replacement, lessen the sub-alcohol guardianship on the permanency side. So that allows us to continue to work with those clients, address the, you know, we can address the child's trauma, but the child is traumatized because the parents are traumatized. And we don't do a good job of working with the parents to address their trauma. And so that's what I've charged Charlotte with, and as we move forward with this vision growing in, is the same, is to continue to work and advocate for the parents to address their trauma so that they can be that support measure for their children and not add to that trauma moving forward.
Well, I'm going to call on all the DHS directors statewide. If the conversation continues to move forward on this safe injection centers, and I don't know what the opinion of all of us are, but I think even through the opioid groups that we have throughout the state, we have all the regions, and those are in some instances, I have heard they're enabling centers, and those would be challenging to have a safe injection site, say that we have it at point A. Now these individuals are going to be arriving there to inject themselves with whatever they choose to do, but you have to have the medical services to provide immediate assistance, which I'm telling you what, I voted no, and I'm going to continue to, because I just don't see how, in fact, unless you will tell me that I'm going the opposite direction, I find that just a huge challenge. Now, I hope that conversation is dead, but it has happened in, we have seen it happen in big cities, Ontario, Canada, Toronto have one, San Francisco.
Washington State has one.
And so they haven't seen the level of success that initially they were planning for. So, and that might be a conversation that we may have to address in the form of legislation in 2025, but that kind of makes it, it's mixed emotions on many, many fronts.
When it comes to that, and CCI is getting ready to take a position on that, we're going to need your feedback when we go up there.
That would be an important piece to present to the Power and the Service Directors Association. Unfortunately, we didn't ask by the way, so we kind of knew that was coming to be back to Washington, D.C., but ultimately, when that new director comes in, is to have the Human Service Directors Association at that table as well, because that's a collective voice for all of the county DHSs, and getting that feedback will go through there quickly and efficiently.
Well, you know, my question has always been, what happens if County A has this safe injection needle exchange program, and you have to have a bed, somebody, or these, and you're not able to get to them, or some happens, whose liability is that? Do we need that as a state? I tell you what, there you can ask this, you can do a poll downtown Denver and in the San Luis County, and they pretty much deal with the same thing because it's a huge challenge. So as Commissioner Haas says, we're gonna need all the support, and hopefully that is already gone away. But to me, that's really not the way of addressing this thing, because at the end of the day, you're gonna have someone laying there suffering, injected with who knows how many substances, and simply because I'm not on your hands, so you can rely on me. It breaks my heart we have seen video of individuals going through just the recovery process. I mean, it's a really tough thing. But
I'm trying to see an expansion of Suboxone program or a methadone program.
Right.
Because, you know, the closest sites are in Pueblo to us.
Well, it's not only just the part about the injection and who's liable and who's not, but if they're not disposing it, those needles and syringes, and depending on where they're located, and if they happen to have HIV or hepatitis or whatever, and one individual gets pricked by that, then who's liable for that?
Well, and I think, you know, when you're talking about even expanding those types of programs, when you're talking about something to this magnitude, each community is going to look completely different. A needs assessment, because you're talking about, you know, one medical hospital who will have to go through extensive specialized training to deal with those situations. You're talking about providers who are going to meet with these clients on a monthly basis for treatment or dating. I mean, the law enforcement's going to have to go through additional training on how us as responding agencies to situations with child neglect abuse.
But here's
like, there's too many complexities to it.
That's what I was going
to say. That it's just a here's the model, fit it in, make it work type situation.
If nothing else, over the past 2 or 3 years that we've been dealing with legislation, when they draft a piece of legislation out there, it's one size fits all. Mm-hmm. And we constantly on every level are telling them what's good for Boulder or Arapahoe County is not good for Baca County, okay? And that's going to be the challenge. Is
well, and the other challenge you have to take into consideration too is population distance to travel to those centers. You put a system like that down here and say there's one here and one in Lamar, that sorts of southeast corner. You're going to have every county overwhelming these agencies,
yes,
sending them here because it's closer than Buffalo, it's closer than Denver. You know, there's just so many factors that never get fined to. And then we've seen this, we've had that discussion that legislators get up there and present this legislation and you know, their heart's in the right place. But there's too many facets to each of those situations that can go horribly wrong if they're not fully assessed. So, you know, it is a challenge, but for our child welfare and our adult services, we're hoping, and we've already seen some great results by having Charlotte on board, but we're hoping to continue to expand that to a point where that division is self-sufficient, self-contained, and then we can expand services in mental health as much as possible in conjunction with the other agencies that we have under our full program.
So are you one of the only ones that is providing this doing this pilot to actually
I haven't actually told anyone at the state. So this is kind of a us theme.
We'll answer the questions when they come.
the state knows that we have Charlotte on board. But the reality is that the level of services we need can't be encumbered under the current funding models that we have. There's just not enough money. And so for us as an agency to be able to provide those services, we do have to look at being creative and expanded. I'm sure there are probably agencies like DHSs and large cities that have whole therapeutic divisions with 20, 30 clinicians on staff, but it's a self-funded component. Will we ever have that many? Probably not. Maybe we must have at least 3 or 4 specialized in different areas that can meet the needs. And keep in mind, not every client is going to click with our therapist. So that's why we have to have our other health providers, because they may have history with those others before, and they're going to want to revisit that individual medical health provider. So, you know, it's not about trying to build a business. It has to be self-sufficient. It has to pay for itself, but it also has to allow us the flexibility to combine the level of services, whether that's in our realm or with another provider somewhere else within the county, but keep it low. It also doesn't mean it was to send clients 80 miles away from me, but mental health providers, when we could possibly do it here. So,
I like that thought process.
Good. And other questions, commissioners? I didn't need to go down that, but I did want to point out the additional case counts on there. So
this is so important. I think when a small county does this, then we will pay attention, because we are so far removed. If you need to transport, and even from the perspective, you know, when we were having a roundtable discussion on the opioid, i.e., mushroom approval and how do we move forward, I made a case for Los Angeles County. If we were to have a major accident on I-25 and you have somebody that ODs someplace within the county, we don't have enough ambulance services locally. We would have to call for mutual aid from other counties. But by the time they get here, hopefully it's not a catastrophic event. So, you know, from that perspective, again, we'll continue to be the voice and advocate for small hospital, critical access hospital here in San Luis County. I need them. They're probably going to transfer somebody out. Now you have a flight for life. And you know, that conversation we're having also as I serve on the board of Children's Hospital, those conversations are going on even at that level with little ones. What happens with all the readily accessible drugs that families have now access to? What happens if you happen to leave, you know, inadvertently? I mean, it is, we're just entering a different chapter. So I didn't think I'd go to look at and live all this stuff. But your information is much appreciated. And from that, sir, no other questions on from my perspective. I'm going to go secure the door.
I've been thinking about it. They get quiet for a minute and then they come back.
But no. From the bottom of our heart, thank you for all the work that you do. It is not easy, and I can only imagine that's why you're so special. And I do what I do, and you do what you do. We'll stay in our lane. So, no other questions that Commissioner has?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to make the motion to approve the caseload counts and activity by program.
Second motion.
Commissioner Montesano?
Yes.
Commissioner Hass?
Yes.
And at any point in time, you want to introduce any of the new faces, we don't see, please feel free.
We will in just a minute. I'll get the proclamation to ask them to attend today.
All right. So we're going to go to 4B, consideration of state contract case management agency, CMA, also known as SEB, single entry point, Mr. Araba.
So commissioners in front of you today, in January, the opted into a short-term contract to finish out the single entry point process as we transition. In front of you is the final contract for the new case management agency redesign that will begin fiscal year July 1. This contract was sent for review by the departments prior to initiation. There were several cases that we didn't push back on, and so the state did meet that demand with us. Especially in the realm of the terms of these contracts. We wanted to keep it to a 1 year, although it was proposed to an 8 year. And we felt like tying into an 8 year term is a little extensive because of the changes with Medicaid and long-term care processing that's gone on. We're really concerned about the involvement into a contract like that. So, but anyways, again, this is state contract presented to you today. The legal counsel did, of course, inform the board that you're not here. But then she did have a chance to review.
Very good. That was going to be, you should be looked that way in council. Do you have any questions on this contract?
And commissioners, keep in mind, this is not just single entry points. It's formerly known as single entry point. This also now encompasses, which Ms. Marcy Mason is online virtually with us today, as well as Garrison. But this also encompasses those IDD waiver services under the HCBS, as well as the state general fund programming that we are offering. And that was one of the other CCB.
HBBS, HCBB, anyway. I think based on that information, if the Commissioner Harris does not have any questions, I don't have a problem proceeding with the approval based upon the recommendation that Council has read.
And she did inform us that she had read and had no issues.
Yes.
So I move to approve the state contract case management agency CMA, FKA, SEP.
I second that motion.
Commissioner Hass?
Yes.
Commissioner Lopez?
Yes. Consideration of core MOU agreement, Rocky Mountain Psychology, Mr. Araba.
So, Commissioner, as I mentioned earlier, we continue to work with our core providers and specialized areas. In front of you is a returning agency, our Rocky Mountain Psychology. This is a annual contract that we renew in May for initiation and year one of our core programming. We're going to do is that agreement today.
And based on the same conversation, counsel has, legal counsel has reviewed it. Have no questions, I would believe. Commissioner Hass, any questions for the rest of us? Okay, no questions on that. I Move to approve the Accordion Leave Agreement, Rocky Mountain Psychology. Second motion.
Commissioner Felix Sullivan?
Yes.
Commissioner Hess?
Yes. For the consideration of course service contract, Health Solutions, Mr. Arriba.
Again, commissioners, one of our core providers that we have worked with for many years on the front of each day is a core service contract with Health Solutions, and we continue to work forward and move forward with the service provided through them.
Thank you, sir. Questions, Commissioner Hess?
Same. None. So make a motion to approve the core service contract Health Solutions.
Second motion.
Commissioner House?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. This is what you were waiting for here, is the consideration of proclamation Foster Care Awareness Month. So, Mr. Erdogan.
So, Commissioner, with us today, I have Ms. Jamie Pepper and Ms. Madison Cummings with our Division of Youth and Family Services. And I know Ms. Callison was here. I don't know if she... Okay. Yeah. But they have... also brought for the board and the folks here, and I know some of our county admin staff are online, and Mr. Dory Camp, and I don't know if Kristen Paul, but anyone downstairs who's not Sean, are welcome to come up after, and they've provided cupcakes, both chocolate and vanilla, in celebration of our Foster Care Awareness Month. So
thank you.
And they tell me their deal.
There's a big debate on the color scheme. Either way, we're all going to end up green tongues. So
very good.
And put it to that.
All right.
Okay.
We are the grand champ, by the way.
There we go.
All right. So, whereas more than 391,000 American children and youth living in foster care deserve to grow up in safe and loving homes devoted to their health, happiness, and advancement. This month, we honor the absolute courage of young people in foster care who too often endure challenges that no child should ever have to confront. And we give thanks to the dedicated kinship and foster parents who care for them during their times of greatest need. And whereas we recognize the biological parents and family of foster children who work hard to overcome difficult circumstances so they can safely reunite with their children. And whereas, despite the selflessness and service of loving foster parents across the country, the children in foster care often face an uphill battle in achieving their full potential. Many carry lasting physical and emotional scars from trauma they experienced at a young age, which can increase their risk of mental health issues or lead to substance use disorders. And whereas our children are our most valuable resources and will shape the future of the state of Colorado and Los Angeles County. And whereas for children and youth already in the foster care system, we must continue to find them loving temporary homes and ultimately safe and supportive permanent homes. And whereas community must make every effort to promote programs and activities that create strong and thriving children and families. And whereas we acknowledge that we must work together as a community to increase awareness about child abuse and contribute to promote the social and emotional well-being of children and families in a safe, stable, and nurturing environment, which includes recognizing, recruiting, and giving thanks to the dedicated families who provide foster care in our community. Now, therefore, the Los Angeles County Board of County Commissioners, alongside the Los Angeles County Department of Human Services, do hereby proclaim May 2024 as the National Foster Care Awareness Month in Los Angeles County and urge all citizens to recognize this month by dedicating ourselves to the task of improving the quality of life of all children and families.
Well, thank you. How many children do we have in foster care in San Francisco? I know we have the numbers in there.
Yeah.
they're in there, but certainly...
In non-kinship foster care?
Maybe both.
In non-kinship foster care, we have just one.
Wow.
Well, in the county. In the county, we just have one.
Yeah.
Out of county, we have 5. And then in Pueblo, we have 2 in Kinship. We have, how many in Kinship? 8 to 10-ish, yeah.
Well, and my question is, of the 391,000 nationwide, the huge things goes to families that step up and become foster families. Because without them, these little ones probably wouldn't have the same opportunity to be successful in life.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, and thank you for the work that you all do in bringing more families and get them interested in going through the process. And I know legislation, there is some kind of tweaks that are going to happen based upon legislation that was approved. But at the end of the day, you know, families will continue to give their all in all for these little ones. Commissioner Haas. Okay, at this time, I'm going to take a motion to approve this proclamation.
Approve the proclamation, foster care awareness.
I second the motion.
Commissioner Haas.
Yes.
Commissioner Peters.
Yes. Consideration of proclamation of World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, June 15, 2024.
Commissioners, we're getting ahead of this this month for 2 very specific reasons, and I have our adult protective service team here. I know our East Marcy Mason line representing our long-term care as well, that we work with at-risk adults, but I'll ask Ms. Ringler and her team to stand and be recognized. They also have a proclamation that they're presenting as we are in the process as an agency in partnership with South Central Council of Governments, the Area Agency on Aging, the Long-Term Care Programming through COG and the City of Trinidad and the Senior Center, the HR Sarah Senior Center. I don't know if the board's aware, but Council of Governments took over and assumed operations for that agency. And so in June, we've always had a partnership with COG in presenting at the Senior Center presentation around World Health-based awareness and impacts upon our local community. This year, as part of a kind of re-grand opening with COG taking over and in conjunction with Ms. Garrison's team and the LEAP program that they supervise, the Department of Human Services, along with those area agency partners, are hosting a one-day festival at the Senior Center. LEAP has sponsored the first 300 seniors who attend will receive a free lunch on behalf of LEAP and the Department of Human Services. We'll have multiple vendors. We're working on some activities for youth to attend with grandparents and parents. And so we're hoping to make a really big day out of this.
Great.
And have a good time. And so we'll also have important information presented at this event regarding elder abuse, neglect, and exploitation, and what we need to do to prevent that. So I'll turn that over to this team, and I'll let them introduce themselves, and one of them will present the proclamation today.
And of course, commissioners, you know me. You're for me every month. Laura Rinko, Supervisor of Adult Protection, and formerly Single Entry, but now the Case Management Agency. And I'm going to turn it over to him.
I'm Pam Espinoza, and I am an Adult Protective Services caseworker.
Kathleen Woodring, Adult Protection caseworker.
Welcome to all 3 of you, and once again, thank you for the work on this forgotten part of our society. Many a times they get written off, and I'll tell you, my father, a 91-year-old person, just while ago passed away. He received opportunities to participate with the community of his age, and they thrive. So thank you for standing for them and doing all the work that you do. Proceed, Ms. Dimashi.
Proclamation World Elder Abuse Awareness Day, June 15th, 2024. Whereas Los Angeles County seniors are valued members of society, and it is our collective responsibility to ensure that they live safely and with dignity. Whereas abuse of older people is a tragedy inflicted upon vulnerable seniors and an ever-increasing problem in today's society that crosses all socioeconomic boundaries. Whereas combating abuse of older people will help improve the quality of life for all seniors across this country and will allow seniors to continue to live as independently as possible and contribute to the life and vibrancy of Los Angeles County. Whereas Los Angeles County seniors should be treated with respect and dignity to enable them to continue to serve as leaders, mentors, volunteers, and important and active members of this community. Whereas the Los Angeles County community should make every effort to build a safer community for our seniors. Whereas the well-being of Los Angeles County seniors is in the interest of all and further adds to the well-being of Los Angeles County communities. Now, therefore, we, the County Commissioners of Los Angeles County, along with the staff of the Los Angeles County Department of Human Services and the Adult and Aging Programs of the State of Colorado, do hereby proclaim June 15th, 2024 to be World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. We encourage every citizen to take time on this day to recognize and celebrate the accomplishment of Los Angeles County seniors who greatly contribute to the community.
Thank you. Well stated. Congratulations. And it is a population that sooner I'll be part of, much later, right? And hopefully we're paving the way for when we get there. But I think it's there is something very, very near and dear. I'll share this real personal story because you moved me today to the core that I didn't know I had, but my dad and I were in Denver, we're having lunch, we're walking in there, and the general manager of this restaurant saw us standing back, and my dad at that time was walking with the walker. He came all the way back there and told my dad, "You come with me, we're gonna find the best seat in the house." And I felt that was so amazing. We didn't have reservations, which by the way, in this place we should have. But they treated my father as if he was not, and we didn't know anyone from anyone, but certainly that was a gesture. And so we need to pay more attention. And VHS from the crib all the way to the grave. So thank you for those services. Sincerely, on behalf of this board, we just don't know what else to say, but thank you.
Seems like a common theme that we've been experiencing here lately. So Rayo, I wish he was still here. 3 years ago, he made his mission to recognize those elders that served, and we were able to recognize those World War II veterans for 2 or 3 years, and now we're working on the Korean War veterans, and we got to recognize them the other day after the appreciation for it. Anyway, with that said, I'll move to approve the proclamation of World Elder Abuse Awareness Day as June 15, 2024.
And I second the motion.
Commissioner Hans?
Yes.
Commissioner Fields?
Yes.
Commissioners, I invite everyone to attend an event. It's on Saturday, June 15th from 10:30 to 3 p.m. More information will be coming out shortly. That post this meeting, a collection of the agencies are meeting to discuss plans as we move forward. So again, I invite you all to attend. We'll have, again, multiple activities and food and information there. So we hope to see everyone there. More than for the time.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
I know you've attended before, but this sounds like it's going to be even better.
Very good.
So we're excited.
Thank you, Mr. Rankin. Appreciate it. We're going to go to Section 5. Welcome back, Commissioner Luis Lopez.
Thank you.
Financial matters. Consideration of financials and bills for March 2024. Mr. Aragon, I know we have these reports. Please walk us through.
So, Commissioners, Mr. Fioranzi, our Deputy Director, who's excited for next month's meeting.
I thought it was this month.
No, not quite yet. But I do want to publicly thank him as well as Mr. Blasey, who's a contractor for us, and his contract is winding down next month, and so he'll be moving on. And But they have been working diligently with myself over the last few weeks to get through our audit components. And so I can report to the board that Mr. Peter Renfield has been able to submit everything that the auditors requested, and we've gotten everything over to them. So we're just waiting final response from them on any additional pieces. And he's been doing the learning curve process. So DHS financials are not an easy piece to absorb. And so I have to give him credit. And other than that, he's picked up quite a bit very quickly. He is quickly monitoring. We're going to be sending him through training as well with one of our local departments in the southern region, who is quite adept at DHS financials as well. So he'll be attending a training and shadowing mentorship process in June with that agency in Rio Grande. No. Yes, Jody is on the hook. She knows.
I could have guessed that one. Jody brings
she's such an asset to all. And I have to give her kudos publicly because they did a presentation last Wednesday of the counties, counties that have improved and the counties that have been really on top. Jody's team, both Rio Grande and Mineral, although she says it's because they're small, very small, but her team worked really very hard and 100% of all of their staff for the year. And so they knew the top 10. And so congratulations to them and the other counties that that have that progression. So we'll get there.
Well,
we're getting there.
Mr. Fiorenzi, you're in for a treat. Jody, if you haven't met her, I have worked with her for the last 5 years. Very fantastic, very knowledgeable. She probably has forgotten more accounting than I'll let her know. But certainly, good luck to you and ask her all the questions. She's really one of those tenants of DHS statewide. We had our CWAC meeting, and I'm telling you, she and I were texting back and forth and emailing, and it's one of those resources that well used. Thank you, Mr. Erwin, for that.
I told Jody next time, since you and I were texting, she was texting, we're just going to group chat.
That sounds good. I like it.
So, Commissioner, in front of your financials, I do want to point one specific thing out. You'll see that in the month of March, which was the first full transition of the case management agency process, the dollar amount of drawdown seems substantially lower than normal. Ms. Ringo and our folks have been working to rectify that with the state, and so we anticipate that we'll see that funding increase and get that backfilled within the next month or so. In addition to that, in next month's meeting, you'll see a substantially large amount drop on that program, and that is because the state passed a stabilization funding measure, which came down, and so we received a $240,000 plus payment to help assist in stabilizing the CMA through that transition phase. So you'll see that piece drop in next month's financials. So it will look very inflated. What looks very deflated this month will look very inflated next month, but ultimately we'll see that average out over the next 6 to 8 months. So that we'll see what that actual drawdown. And both Mr. Fiorenzi and our business office manager, who reports to him, and Jolynn Goulet. Jolynn is going to be our primary billing specialist for Medicaid, as we have to provide those services for both Ms. Mason's team and also Ms. Ringo's team now. So the traditional payout that Seth had in the past is not the same. So we now have to bill Medicaid directly for portions of our case management, what we call our case management services. So those teams are now in that process, and this really is going to be our primary billing agent for those Medicaid specifically, as well as our state general funding program drawdown, which is separate from Medicaid.
Very good.
I'll say that, commissioners, if there's no questions on that.
Tom, I can attest to you and Brian Wild working together at a recent staff meeting, which was supposed to be meeting for breakfast at 6:30 in the morning. He was on a phone call with Andrew Books.
Yes.
He didn't make breakfast and be in to go to the staff meeting after that. But I said, at 6:30 in the morning, you look like it was the only chat we have.
We have been 6:30 in the morning, and we've been here until 10 o'clock at night, because, of course, he has to do it either before or after his hours of call. So I appreciate him pulling some late nights with me to get this done. But he and Mr. Fiorenzi and Mr. Run as well stay late to make sure that we got everything ready for the audit. And so we are we're very pleased, and I did get to actually meet with the auditors last Wednesday and get to speak with them in person for about an hour, and had some good conversations. So we're excited to see the results of the audit for this year.
One small comment on the Schindler elevator.
That's where I was going to.
There were basically, of course, one transaction, one payment reversal, and then issued a different check for the same amount. So I think that's probably an oversight or a different check number. But how's the elevator going?
Well, please don't change the 60. And speaking of secondary, Tom, one of the folks in attendance here today was trapped in for a short amount of time.
Is it the one that's red finished?
You know, Commissioner, service reality. In the 4 years I've been here, we've been able to, with that company, we seem to get it. It's better than it's been. Is it ideal? No. And ultimately, within the next year or so, we're going to have to start looking at a potential project to replace that elevator. It's just, we also, for security measures that I discussed with you all, it's also still a security issue if we cannot get a lock system on it so that the basement is inaccessible. And so at this point, we've found a way around that, but ultimately we want to be able to make sure that folks that are not needing to go to the basement are not capable of going to the basement. When we contacted the agency, they stated that that elevator, although it's not as old as probably what the courthouse has, that the system is so old that they can't find a retrofitted piece for that. Also, the cost of maintenance with that elevator is just outrageous. It would cost us less to replace the entire piece and put a better system in with a better warranty than what was put in there prior to my entrance into this.
So the background, and somebody, Lori, has been here for a long time, knows the history. And that elevator was the topic of lawsuit when I first year in office. And we're resolving that lawsuit with Schindler and also the contractors. And it goes to show you, please don't go with the cheapest bid in the government on certain issues. And this is the one particular moving forward. I think truly for commissioners in the future, I really think, Michael, you probably need to look at some sort of funding mechanism and grants to replace it. Schindler is probably one of the worst in the state of Colorado that is utilized as the elevator companies in the state, and I think maybe moving forward, we have to fight the board. So the next year or two, please don't just band-aid and keep putting band-aids on. I recommend you put a plan together, a comprehensive plan for future commissions getting that in retrofitted.
Yeah, but I do have a question. How long was she?
How long were you?
8 days
to 30 minutes.
Was that right after the security test was done?
Is that about it? You guys.
She threw back in the
security body down.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. And I will say this, that upon my interview years, 1.5 years ago to this agency, I was shocked how little Schindler engaged in actually certifying on an annual basis the safety of that component of that elevator. And so since I've been there, my best Mr. Berlino as deputy director prior to maintenance, now Mr. Renton moving forward as we transition those pieces to him in time. But ultimately, with that inspection and a more responsive outcome from them, we've been able to lessen the amount of outages as well as folks being contained within extended time. So we still all have a saying in our department, if you're going to climb on the elevator, make sure you have your cell phone with you. So,
and a ding dong, just in case.
Yes. You know, I will say that we've mitigated that system being out quite a bit, though, in 4 years. The first year, it was horrible. I think we went one period of 2 months without even Schindler down to actually.
So what is Schindler's list?
Literally. And figured.
But not that horrible.
Okay, very good. Listen, thank you so much, commissioners. And by the way, meditation time, right?
Yeah.
Very good.
She got a day off that day.
Any questions on the financials and bills for March 2024? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
Did you read
On the bills?
Yes, I'm sorry.
No. So the total for bills for March were $106,336.19.
I move to approve the financials and bills for March of 2023.
Man, Gates, and
yeah, sure. I'll second the motion.
Yeah. How about Commissioner Hassan?
Yes.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. 5B, consideration of payroll for pay dates April 15th and April 30th of 2024, Mr. Herrera.
Commissioners, payroll for the date 4/15/2024, the total amount was $121,963.21. And for April 30th, 2024, total payroll was $121,775.80.
So, Mr. Fiorenzi, just kind of an FYI historical perspective of before we used to get a 10 by key calculator tape that would be attached to financials. And that was kind of my checkpoint. But now I kind of like this perspective. So keep that up. Commissioners, any questions on those two dates? If there are none, I'll entertain a motion.
Motion to approve payroll dates for April 15th and 30th, 2024.
Second the motion.
Commissioner Luis Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Hass?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix Lopez?
Yes. And by the way, thank you all so much. And come back and see us. Tell us more stories because, you know, this is one of these opportunities that we have to really exchange real information that is impactful to our community. So, having no other items on this agenda, I'll entertain a motion because we're looking at those cupcakes in there.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second the motion. Commissioner Hass?
Yes.
Commissioner Lisa Lopez?
Yes.
Commissioner Felix?
Yes. Thank you all. Please enjoy one.